Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is At The Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello. Hello. Welcome into another episode of At The Turn. Nick and Joe with you. Nick is coming in loud and clear today. The hunt for the pod microphone is over. We overcame a few speed bumps here and there, but Nick, let the people hear it.
Well, this is the episode I think you've been waiting for months, literally. I think it's been at least 2 months since we've had the old Yeti in front of me. So let's just, it's like almost reminiscing. It's the new beginnings, going back to the old, the new normal. I don't even know what to call it, but it's great to have the microphone, the proper equipment back.
It is. It sounds good. Maybe a little hot still. I was trying to dial you down a little bit. It's just I'm not used to this booming, crystal clear fidelity that I'm getting. And it's coming in so good that I just want to make sure that
it's all the excitement. It's all the excitement.
Oh yeah, fabulous, folks.
I'm not going to move my head. I'm not going to touch my microphone. Don't worry, Joe. We got this.
I put you under the most stressful conditions before the podcast and during the podcast to operate. And still you come through. It's like I'm forcing you to make a 4-footer downhill for par almost like every 5 minutes in this podcast. And you just pour it in the back.
It's so tough. Yeah.
You're not hitting it with die speed. You are trying to make the putt. You're not worried about the comebacker. And I love that about you. Folks, reminder to please rate and review the podcast. Give us 5 stars. Spotify, Apple. Do you listen to a podcast somewhere else? The metrics say you don't. So please let us know what you think of the show on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Give us 5 stars. We would appreciate it very much. Kind of a grab bag today. I'm excited to see where things go. There's a lot of prompts in the sheet. So we'll just start ripping them off here in a second. But first, it is time for the Handicap Report. It's brought to you by Blue Tees. Use promo code TURN at checkout for 10% off the best rangefinders in the game. You can't be dialed in unless you're dialed in with your yardages. Nick, I want you to go first because there was a roller coaster of emotion that you went through texting me and Romy about your most recent outing at U of I, talking about how far you're bombing it. I saw a good birdie made. We're thinking the handicap's going to go down, and then maybe not the ending you were hoping for.
Well, it's actually happened to me twice now. This is going to be the Nick rules later on. And it's also just going to be a continuation of the Mad Golfer of the Week. It's also a continuation of the Handicap Report. My Handicap Report is 21.4. I've officially knocked more than 3 strokes off my index this year, which is just embarrassing.
Well done.
I was at 24.5 in January. That's crazy, but we're moving the right direction.
Good man.
There are some issues with the USGA's new 9-hole posting scores, and it's not just me. I've got a couple. I've posted 2 9-hole scores that we'll talk more about it later.
Okay.
I can't right now. I got to save. Well, I can't start off with Mad Golfer energy.
No, you can't. But let's focus on the good part, which is you hit a tee shot over 300 yards, and you made a birdie on 6, which is a par 5 at U of I, but that's a tricky green. That's a tricky second shot. So can you walk me through the birdie that you made?
Yeah, it was a bomb drive. I hit a 5-wood just short of the hole, or just short of the green. The flag was in the back, so we didn't have to deal with, for those who don't know, it's a very severely sloped green, back to front, left to right, like all sorts of crazy undulation. But if the flag is in the back, you kind of get to avoid all that. You're going uphill the whole way. If it's in the front, if you're
good luck
above the hole, you're just going to putt off the green, almost guaranteed. So anyways, flag was in the back. I hit a kind of short game approach shot. It was from like 30 yards, 20 yards to 9 feet, and made the putt.
I love to hear it. That's good stuff, man. Well, I'm sorry that the USGA is not helping your cause, but congrats on dropping it 3 strokes.
Sorry to my competition, because they're going to, somebody's going to be giving me 20 strokes. I'm going to go out there and shoot 81, and they're going to be livid, and they're going to take out their frustration on the USGA because it's not my fault. I'm following their rules. More on that later.
Well, I'll get to mine, and at the risk of sounding like a complete garbage human, we convinced Mark to put us in the gold flight of the Corner Club Open. I want to make sure that we don't have the highest handicap in that flight. Now, hear me out, because Mark does listen to this podcast, but here's what I'm going to pose to you, Nick, and I just want to see if you get sign-off. Let's say that the highest combined handicap in the gold flight is a 10. I don't want to go in as a 10. I want to go in as like a 9.8 or like a 9. I don't want to have the biggest buffer, because if we do go crazy in the best ball and scramble, which we've never done, then I don't want to be accused of being a sandbagger, basically, is my biggest concern. And here's what I'm getting to. I'm up to a 9.7. Now, that's dangerous for the field of the Corner Club Open, me being a 9.7. I haven't broken 80 since November, so it's not like I'm scoring like a madman. I have flourishes of greatness. Like, I was, I think, 3 under for a 7-hole stretch, but shot 81. So it's like, that's basically what my game is right now. So I went from a 9.3 to a 9.7. I'm probably going to be hovering around a 10 when I go to the U of I in June, but that's what happened last year. And then, you know, I had a good day in the best ball. We had cold putters in the scramble, but I'm worried, not what you should be worried about, but if either of us gets a hot putter in the scramble, we're going to win a lot of money. And I want to win the money on good terms. I don't want to be accused of being a sandbagger. How much does that worry you? Let me guess, 0%.
The things that keep you up at night, Joe, what a luxury. Joe is losing sleep over winning too much money in the Corner Club Open, in the gold flight, and being accused of being a sandbagger because one of us got a hot putter and we shot like, I don't know what you're thinking. Like, Joe is like losing sleep over shooting 62 in a scramble and being accused of being a sandbagger.
66 I'm okay with is that in my result. Wildest dreams.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. You know, call me a sandbagger. I'll blame the USGA, the Idaho State Golf Association, putting in these 9-hole scores, you know, just a few fingers over par and getting index differentials of 20 and 19. It's not my fault. We're playing by the book, Joe.
Okay. Look,
there are a lot more people playing in this specific golf tournament doing a lot worse things than we are. We're just playing our golf and posting our scores and moving along. Like,
do you care to elaborate?
I don't think we need to be worried about any of this stuff.
That's such a great point. Like, in terms of, like, if you were to rank on the dirtbag scale of, like, I'll put Martinick as the least amount of dirtbag and the two brothers that got in a fist fight the week before a tournament that we got paired with, that's the dirtbag scale. We're definitely more towards the Martinick than we are brothers punching each other in the face. Like,
yeah.
The worst thing that I do is, you know, I drink too much and I have to walk home instead of drive home. Like, that's like my biggest sin that I commit in the Corner Club Open, basically.
Right. If somebody's pissed off that I'm a 20 handicap and I hit a 300-yard drive, like, you know what? So sue me. And also, we definitely can't be considered sandbaggers, because no matter what, we're only getting a 7-stroke differential. So even if you're a 10, they're going to put me at a 17. I'm not going to be a 17. Basically next month, you know, maybe, hopefully. But more than likely, I'm going to be losing some of those strokes that I should be getting because of that differential. It's all good. All the money is made in the Calcutta anyways. Like, nobody cares about the $25 in cash in an envelope that Mark hands us for finishing third place net in the gold flight. Like, nobody's getting up in arms about that envelope.
That's the saddest envelope you can be handed. Here's money, but barely. Here's a few quarters that you win for driving out to Moscow, Joe. We'll see you in 2025. That somehow is the handicap report. Okay, first thing that I want to get to. This is one where I had a round of golf at like 12:40 in the afternoon on a Saturday. And my lead up to it was doing chores, hanging out with Lace, made a big breakfast. I'm just like beaming. And I said to her, I was like, if I could somehow bottle this feeling that I have, like the 4 hours before a round of golf, like I felt like I was in The Godfather and like, I couldn't refuse any request. Like, my daughter was getting married. Like, anything she would have asked me is like, yes, of course, I will mow the grass and weed right now. I'm going to go to Rose City in 3 hours. Ask me anything you want. And it makes me think of, like, when you're a short-timer at work, when you're, like, about to go on a week-long vacation or take, like, 3 days off, like, that Thursday, Friday before you go, that's, like, the most productive I'll ever be is those few days, those few hours, that fleeting feeling of, like, it's all good. Any problem I can tackle right now because I know I have this wonderful thing on the horizon. Do you experience that? And how much has that changed with having the kiddos?
I definitely get... So whenever I have a round of golf on the books, like I haven't booked a tee time yet for this week, but I'm probably going to in the next 24 hours, just book a tee time. Once it's on the books... Like, my whole energy changes, and like the way I look at things changes. Like, I, you better make sure all the dishes are done, the floors are clean, you know, the laundry's put away, the grocery shopping is done. That's just a given. But like that time period you're talking about, like the couple hours leading up to the tee time, I always get this like not good energy. Like, I can't control it, and it's like, not quite a panic, but it's like I'm like kind of like frantic, but like I don't know. It's
antsy.
Antsy is probably the best word for it. Like I'm trying to do all the things that I need to do before I play golf, but I'm also trying to like make sure I have tees and balls in my bag, and maybe I should clean a couple clubs. I don't know. Like, is there mud in the are in these grooves? Like, do I need to worry about this? What shoes am I going to wear? Is my golf outfit ready? Do I need to do a few last things for work? Do I need to eat these? You know, eat a lunch, do these dishes. I get like everything I've ever had on my to-do list, like comes rushing back in like the 90 minutes before I'm supposed to leave for a tee time. It's very strange. I used to try to like fight it, but now I'm just like acknowledging it. Like, this is the weird energy I get before a round of golf. It's all good. You know, it's just here. And yeah, but I definitely, I get a days leading into the tee time vibe and a hours leading into the tee time vibe.
Yeah. I think that's a really good way to put it. I also get sort of like a nervous energy before a round of golf, which is why I need to have such a prolonged routine before I play. And even if I play early, I'll get up. Lace gives me so much guff for it, but I'll get up super early to like have my coffee, do my yoga, eat my breakfast, do my thing. Like, I have to do it. And like, even at the Corner Club Open, like I wake up at like 5:30 a.m. and like, get my coffee and go to Mickey D's and do my yoga and do my whole thing. So by the time you guys see me, I've been up for like 3-4 hours. God bless Martinik, who's the fourth in our foursome. He was my breakfast club buddy last year, which was great because we got up at the crack of, I think it was 7 o'clock when it opened, and we were there and we met them right away and had a nice big breakfast. And it was a really good way to kind of start the day. And I have to fill my time with stuff, right? That's why part of the anticipation is like making that big breakfast, doing chores, working out, doing kind of keeping myself busy, my mind active. But back there somewhere, I know, oh, it's all good, because your biggest problem in about an hour is, do we go 3-iron or 5-wood off this tight par 4? Like, the real world problems will go away and we can just focus on golf problems, which aren't in fact problems at all. That's made up stuff that we've come up with in our mind. And it's the best kind of problem to have. So the anticipation is fun, but you're right that the short-term version of it can be a little bit iffy.
Do you feel like your routine, like you're kind of saying like it's a distraction from all that, but it kind of sounds like you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. It's like, I'm going to play this round of golf, so I better work out. I better do this yoga. I better get a good meal. Like, it's like all these things are kind of like building up to this round. Did you not feel that way?
No, and as a matter of fact, I didn't structure my eating very well on Saturday. And so I had a big breakfast at like 9 and teed off at like 1. And I got a sandwich at the turn. But like, I was really jittery on the front 9 where like I couldn't hit a fairway and I wasn't putting well. And as soon as I had a sandwich, I went birdie, par, par, birdie, par, birdie. And I was like, all right, this. And then I don't know if I had like the makers was a bad idea, but I kind of leaked oil coming in. But like, no, I really feel like if I get my body right, then I can just worry about golf. But like, I don't know. It takes, I talked with Romy about this a few months ago. It just takes more to rev the engine up than it used to. Like, I just feel like I need to stretch. And if I don't, I'm going to feel like really stiff. And if I don't eat, I'm going to be worried about that. And so, yeah, I mean, it used to be all I needed was a jug of Idaho Ice and about 15 cigarettes. And I was going to be able to play a round of golf with you in my 20s. But now it takes a lot more to get me to that space where it's like I can actually be out there for 4.5 hours in the sun. And my God, the sunscreen. My God, how much sunscreen I put on my body now compared to the none that I put on when I was living in Idaho 14 years ago or whatever.
Well, times have changed.
It's so true. The priorities that we have. Nick, fortunately, I didn't have to do this in my most recent round, but I wrote this on the sheet, and then I saw it on the PGA Tour event yesterday. They were talking about practicing dropping the golf ball. How much do you think about how you're dropping the golf ball or like where you're trying to drop it? Like, does any thought go into it, or are you just like, I'm just dropping the golf ball, who cares?
Some thought goes into it, but like, it's more, you hear them talk about it, and I've seen people be like, oh, they practice this. They practice this. And like, sure, if this is your career, I can see that. But like me just going out there hoping someday to break 90 again, that's not going to be the difference. Sure, you don't want to drop it like into a divot or something. But, you know, I think I just kind of look and I'm like, okay, coast is clear here, and then I just drop. Like, it's a very little amount. I try not to make, like, a stupid drop. But really, like, it's not a big deal for me.
The one thing that I do, or at least try to do, is I try to drop the ball not where I want it to finish. So I assume unless the grass is really thick or wet, the ball is going to bounce at least once, especially later on you get in the season. So I kind of determine where I want the end point of the drop to be and drop near that. And sort of like I'm playing a game of Plinko, I try to game the system where it's like, okay, I see this nice lie where it's going to be like sitting up perhaps on a little tuft of grass. And so I try to drop next to it in anticipation that it will bounce, hopefully where I want it to land, so I will have a good lie. I will say, my success rate may be zero in doing this. So I don't know if I should change my strategy, if I should just accept how it is. But for some reason, I feel as though I never get a good drop. Like, I never drop and I'm like, hell yeah, that thing is sitting pretty. I'm in a good spot right now. It always seems to nestle. And I don't know if that's the distance that you're dropping the ball now from your knee or something else is going on, because you're supposed to just let go of the ball, right? You can't like flick it or put spin on it or something like that, can you?
No, I don't think there's a technique to releasing the ball from your fingers. And this is all, it's classic golf overthinking, because how many times, sure, you get bad lies in the golf course just like normally, but you just walk up to your lie, you see it, and then you accept it, and then you plan your shot. But when you're dropping it, you somehow feel like you're responsible for controlling the lie, but ultimately, gravity is going to do its thing. You're on a golf course, which isn't flat. It's not like a soccer pitch. So things are going to happen. It's going to roll where it rolls. It's really like, yeah, you can practice it and try to like anticipate. Like, I like your strategy of like not dropping it where you want it to land. Or that seems kind of smart. I'm sold on it, whether or not it works. But
yeah.
Ultimately, like it's golf. There are bigger things at play here than what you can control. So like, as long as you're not dropping it into like, again, like a divot or some like dire result, like it's just going to do its thing and end up, and then you just have to accept it and move on. It just seems like classic golf overthink. Like, just drop it and just play it. Like, who cares?
I think that's fair. I do yearn for an era that I was never a part of when I watch old Masters or U.S. Opens from the 70s or 80s, and you see the way the guys drop back then, where they put the ball behind their shoulder and they drop it like that. Seems like a really fun way to do it. You know, we've only ever had the shoulder height. The knee thing, there's nothing more, I mean, emasculating is the wrong way to put it, but that's how it feels. I just feel like a little six-year-old kid on an Easter egg hunt when I'm, like, crouched down at my knee and, like, and then I drop the ball. It just feels so strange and, like, the least athletic thing you can do in a round of golf is just take a normal drop now. I hate it. It's a terrible, terrible change.
It is so weird. It's just, like, the crouch down. I'm like, there's no good technique. There's no way to make it look cool. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Like, you can't, like... People get their knees together, their ankles together, and they kind of like, you know, it's like you said, you almost like make a wincing face when you do it.
Dropping the golf ball. I mean, I guess ultimately the solution is don't hit it in a penalty hazard, and then you won't have to worry about it.
Yeah, penalty area. Good drop. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Okay, out of the three of these, I want to talk about being a single, Nick, because this is something you do a lot. We haven't talked about this in the pod in a few years. My usual foursome, my rotation of folks didn't have availability this week. And I was like, what the hell? Let's go out by yourself. This is what you used to do all the time. This is how you learned the game. You went out by yourself. You met random people. I just had the best time. I played with a couple of dudes in their 60s, Ricky and Kenny, hilarious old guys. Played with a young guy named Phil who picked it up during COVID. Lives down in Silverton. It's probably like 45 minutes away from Portland. We just had a great old time on Rose City. And it just reminded me that you are out there by yourself and you're having such a unique experience with other people. And you're meeting people that you would never normally spend this amount of time with. And not to get too dramatic or over the top about it, but it is a really special thing to be with someone for that period of time. You learn about them over the course of the round. You see how they react to good shots and bad shots. And you just sort of, I don't know, pick up stuff about people. It teaches you about yourself. Like, you watch people's approach to the game, how seriously they take it, how seriously they don't, what they're doing out there. And it just sort of, it was a very refreshing experience to go out there and be a single. Like, I love playing with my usual group of people and sort of the rotation of folks that I have, but getting out there with some randos, it was just a really awesome experience, and I'm going to try to do it a lot more this year, I think.
Yeah, I've played a few rounds at U of I. Every time I've been paired up with randos. I played once with one of the top PGM players in the program. There's like 18 or 20 professional golf management, which basically become a PGA pro after the program in the country. Idaho has one of them. Played with one of those kids. I played with a Wazoo student last week who, like, there's a program called U on Course, U for University. There's also a program called Youth on Course. Both are like USGA, like you get a discount on golf. And he says, I call the U of I golf course. We have this lovely Palouse Ridge over at my campus, but I call the U of I and I say, I'm with U on Course, and they either can't understand me or don't know the difference. And they give me the Youth on Course rate. So I'm playing this course for pennies on the dollar. So it doesn't make sense to play this beautiful Palouse Ridge on my own campus. I'm going to just save some money and go play U of I. It's been really fun. I've kind of noticed, like, I have a different persona than I have recently when I'm playing with randoms. Maybe because
you're just a dickhead. Like,
no. Maybe it's because I'm the older person. Like, I've played with only college kids, and they seem like they're a little bit nervous at first, and I want them to feel like welcome and at ease. So, like, I'm just much more talkative with randoms than I ever have been. Like, back when I was in New England, I would just like only speak when spoken to. I didn't want to interact with those people. Like, I didn't really care. They weren't not really my people. Now I'm just like chatty. I'm chatting about like their golf bags. I'm chatting about the course. Like, I don't even know. I even like catch myself. I'm like, God, I'm annoying myself. This person probably doesn't want to spend 4 hours with me. But yeah, somehow that's been my go-to fatherly golf playing partner persona this year.
I really like this. I think it's a combination of two things. One, yes, you are older and you're a father, and that's probably changed your perception of what it's like to be around kids, right? People that are 20, 19 years old. The other is, you're back, baby. You're out of the Northeast. The vibe of the person you are dealing with at U of I is so different than what you were dealing with in the Northeast. You're getting uptight, exclusionary, old asshole versus young, happy to be there. Can't believe I'm out here for $10. College kid who is just happy to be on planet Earth. All their mistakes are in front of them. And you're there and you're like, this is refreshing. I'm on my course. I'm home. My family's around. Like, you're in such a good vibe, and you're sensing, like you said, you're sensing that sort of like that nervous energy that perhaps we were talking about earlier in the show. And you're seizing it and you're saying, hey, relax. Everything's fine. Uncle Nick is here. Let's have ourselves a good day out here. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I think that's great. I had a young Sparky that I was playing with too. He was a little bit nervous and he was just sort of in awe of everything. Like, I told him I had a golf podcast. And he was like, what? How do you do that? What is it called? He was just like,
with daddy's money or your own money?
He was just such a nice guy. And the older guys were, they were so funny. They were just cracking jokes at each other all day, calling each other old farts and stuff. Like, when one out hit the other, I mean, they're hitting the driver 175 and they're just giving each other guff about out driving each other. It was such a good day. So that's being paired up with people. When you are by yourself, like, let's say you get sent off the course by yourself. When you approach a twosome or a threesome, what is your initial thought? Do you take stock of the situation where you want to either play through or join or hang back? Those are essentially your three options. So I have to assume it's situational, because for me, it usually is.
It's situational. I think ideally hang back is my move, because I like to avoid strangers when at all possible, first and foremost, despite what I just said.
Yeah.
If I don't have to meet them and shake hands and like speak to them, then I'd prefer not to.
Sure.
If time is not an issue, if there's nobody on my back, like, it doesn't make sense to hang back if there's a threesome in front of you and a foursome behind you. Like, that's just dumb. I'm more likely to, if I'm a single waiting and somebody from behind me catches me, to like extend the offer and be like, hey man, do you just want to join up? Because it's so awkward when they kind of approach you and like the two groups combined are still a foursome or less, and you just kind of like turn the other way and act like you don't see what's going on. And you're just like, I'm not going to be the first one to say something. So I always make sure I'll say something if I'm the lead group in that scenario, but ideally I'd just like to hang back.
Yeah. I think it depends for me. If it's like a bunched up day and I'm constantly going to be on these guys, like, I'll probably ask to join as opposed to playing through. If the course is open and there's a twosome in front of me taking forever, I'm just going to try to play through them, right? And that's a tricky scenario sometimes, because if you're in front of two people who don't really know what they're doing or are not having a good day or are just kind of being weird, excuse me, then perhaps it can be a little bit awkward. But I think by and large, people will let you play through. And I love offering to let people play through, because whenever I do that, you get greeted by one of two things. One, just intense gratitude and appreciation for you making this offer. Or what it sounds like you would do if in this situation is to just say, hey, I'm good. I'm good back here. Thank you for the offer. I'm just going to take my time. And to me, I want that to be established as soon as possible. Because like you said, if there's the pretending of not seeing and you're like, this happens on the first hole, okay. But then the second hole and the third hole, it's just there's this tension that builds in the air that you need to release. And I want to do it as soon as possible when we first make contact, rather than the sixth hole where this has happened. Because then if you're not on the same page, it can get a little testy out there.
Yeah. I also like to play with, have time when I'm playing by myself and I know that I'm going to be waiting on the group ahead of me, like every other hole at least. Like I'm not holding up any kind of pace. It kind of frees me up to play at whatever pace I feel like I want to play at, which I like to take my time over a shot, not over a shot, but like while I'm evaluating a shot, but like go pretty quickly between shots, I think is kind of my, just my go-to rhythm. And I don't have to feel like if I'm taking a minute to look at a shot, like I have to worry about anybody else being bothered by that. But yeah, if the course is clear ahead of the group, if there's one group between you and cruising, I'm going to get through. Like I'm going to kind of not quite warning shots, but I'll kind of let them know that the invitation would be welcome to play through.
How do you
get
do that?
Through them? Just kind of get off greens quickly. Mm-hmm. So like they tee off and they think your way back there. And then all of a sudden you're on the next tee box and they just get sick of that. Cause nobody wants to feel like they're being pushed. So you want to make sure like you feel like they feel like they're being pushed. And then eventually, usually like within a hole or two, they're like, just go through and you play. You gotta make sure you hit a couple good shots and then they never see you again.
If I may, I think one of my best attributes on the golf course is understanding the situational groups around me. Like I have a full and deep understanding of, has this group been waiting? Are we cool? Is anyone waiting on us? It's like, no, we've been waiting the entire time. They're waiting on us because we're waiting on someone ahead of them. If we are part of the waiting train, it doesn't matter what's happening behind us. This is all part of the situation. If someone has been waiting for us, then you can signal to them to play through. I love waving people on. If I'm in the fairway and they're on a tee, we're taking forever, just wave them on through. Nothing better than waving someone through. Because at that point, then it's on them. If they choose not to do it, or if they don't have their act together or not paying attention, sorry guys, you missed your opportunity. I tried to wave you through. So I like being a bit of a flagger out there, trying to direct all the traffic and figure out who needs to be where and who's doing what. That's the one thing that new golfers, I think, probably freak out the most about is, am I holding someone up? Am I ruining someone else's experience? Which I really hate when people feel that way, because 98% of the time it's in their head. It is so infrequent that someone is really holding someone up and the group behind is not taking some sort of action to correct that, or you're paired with someone who is not sort of the captain of the group and directing traffic in the way I was describing earlier. Just someone's got to have their stuff together. As long as one person has their stuff together in every group, the golf course is going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. And you do need to have that course awareness, because it can't just be there's a group behind us, let's let them through, because is there a group behind them? Like, is there a group in front of you? Like, there's no point in just trading places with a group and then everyone's still just waiting. And you don't want to let someone through and then all of a sudden the next group is right on their tail, and then you're in this exact same situation with just different faces. So you have to have that awareness of like the two holes in front of you and the two holes behind you and your hole.
Yep. Just got to know what's going on the golf course. Just court awareness. Just being aware of everything that's going on. Anything else you like about being a single? I would just recommend people to do it. It can be kind of scary if you've not done it very often, but just give it a try. Once you do it, it really frees you up to just be on the golf course more often.
Yeah, I just want to play more golf. I mean, like, I know I wanted to play more with people, but now every time I've gotten paired up. And I'm looking forward to when school gets out, because this course is crawling with college kids, which is great.
Yeah.
It's great, but I want to go out at 2:00 on a Thursday and not have foursomes on every hole and be paired up with strangers. Like, I want to go and play in like an hour and 40 minutes for 9 holes and see like 3 other dudes out there.
That's the beauty of playing and living near university courses. Once it's summertime and school is out, you can tee off at 5 p.m. and be done by 8. You can play a full 18. You are motoring. Well, I'm very excited for you. I hope all of you out there decide to play more golf by yourself. It is lovely. And with that, I am so excited for this week's Mad Golfer of the Week. It is not Nick Heidelberger. It is brought to you by Piper Golf. Use promo code TURN10 at checkout for incredible savings off incredible golf balls. Time to stock up. Golf season is here. It's May tomorrow. It's unbelievable. Get out there. Play some golf. Use Piper golf balls. Next week, an inaugural event on the PGA Tour. It's an Oppo Field event. The Myrtle Beach Classic being played at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. The Mad Golfer of the Week, Nick. I knew I had to pick it when I saw this name. First name, Ima. Last name, Noid. This is from I'm Annoyed.
So good.
Quote, never play here. If you didn't pay for your round ahead of time and paid after, you would have thought it was a $50 round. Awful conditions. Awful and awful. We've played King's North, Moreland, TPC, and Die Barefoot. All were less expensive. Most had 17 and under play free. I don't know about that. And they were all cheaper than the Dunes. My son asked me on the third hole if he thought we were at the wrong course. I played great. This course sucks. Papa, are we in the wrong course? I don't know. And there's more to go. I don't know if we've ever had a better non sequitur in terms of someone saying they play. At no point were they talking about how they played in their round of golf. It was just, I played great. This course sucks. All right, here's the rest of it. Back to I'm Annoyed. Dunes management should be ashamed of themselves taking advantage of tourists. I swear, I heard them laughing at me in the pro shop after I paid.
I love the picture of just every time somebody pays a green fee, they just all laugh. Like they're just laughing all the way to the bank every 10 minutes when someone checks in for a round of golf.
Can you guys believe this? I made this kid pay. He could have played for free if they knew what they were doing. All right, back to I'm Annoyed. I will be posting this on every site and every day to save anyone I can money. I hate you, Dunes!
I have an immediate contact who I actually played golf with in January in Florida, who is the golf in Myrtle Beach, like media contact. Like he's like the overseer of all like publication, press, public relations for golf in Myrtle Beach.
Wow.
By all accounts, the Dunes Club is like a top two or three course in this mecca of golf. I think there's like 90 courses in Myrtle Beach by all accounts. It's like one of the best two you can play. The PGA Tour is going there. But I'm Annoyed somehow played great, but the course sucks. This is a classic.
Incredible stuff from I'm Annoyed. Thank you for your contribution. You are the Mad Golfer of the Week. And with that, it is now time for Nick Rules. Brought to you by Matchstick Golf. As always, you promo code TURN20 at checkout. Nick, I have a fun anecdote before we get into the Mad Golfer, excuse me, the Nick Rules. We've moved on. It's now Nick Rules.
Same thing.
Phil. Same thing today. Phil, the young guy that I played with, had a Matchstick Golf sticker on his push cart. I asked him about it. He told me a great story about Matchstick Golf. Matchstick Golf was at the Oregon Golf Show. They had a pepperoni pizza slice sticker. He's like, hey, do you make ball markers of that? Dane said, I have one left at the shop. Give me your email. I will mail it to you. Sure enough, Phil followed up with Dane Delgado. Dane Delgado mailed it to him. The last pizza slice was with Phil. Nice job, Dane Delgado. Nice job, Phil. Support this local brand that supports this show. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout for incredible savings on everything besides the pepperoni pizza slice. Unless it's back.
I think my slice is... It's a slice in heaven right now.
It's in Rhode Island.
I don't know where it is. I do have an old-fashioned ball marker coming my way. I just got the email this morning. My shipment has been... My order has been shipped.
Ooh.
I took the advice we talked to Dane about. I got the magnet, the hat clip magnet. I have a golf hat. It's just going to be my golf hat. It's an orangish, like a burnt orange, like Texas Longhorns colored hat. So I got the clip. I got the old fashioned, which kind of feels like it'll kind of be camouflaged in with that look.
Like so an old fashioned, like the drink old fashioned.
The drink, an old fashioned. Yep. It's a new Matchstick marker. Yep, it's incredible. So that's coming. That's going to be my clip, my hat, my marker all season. Hopefully we will see. Okay, on to Nick Rules. So okay. Everybody here knows it, you don't just drop your handicap from a 24.5 to a 21.4 just on sheer good golf, right? You need to have some some hacks, right, to find some loopholes in the system. And I identified the USGA's new, for 2024, nine-hole posting as a loophole in the system, because I know that I can probably shoot a decent nine-hole score, but it's going to be much tougher to go play 18 and put two nines together, right? So I'm like, okay, nine holes. I even mentioned I played nine in nine over, and I was making the turn. Not that I was considering walking off, but thinking in my head, if I walked off right now, I'd get a pretty good differential. I'd drop the handicap. I didn't do that. But I have played a few nine-hole rounds since then. First nine-hole round I played, shot five over. And this was a planned nine-hole round. This was not a, I'm fleeing for the parking lot. I'm quitting while I'm ahead. This was planned nine holes. Uh-huh. I send you and Romy scorecard as quickly as I could. Just make sure everybody knows.
This happened.
This happened. It's well documented. I put it in the USGA app. My first score I posted, not the first, but one of the first scores I posted with the Idaho Golf Association. And I get a differential comeback of 19.5.
Oh.
I'm like, I just shot five over for nine holes. Like, okay. Not that they're just going to double that and give me a differential of like 10 or 11, but I thought like 14, 15, maybe. So then I'm like driving to pick my kids up from daycare. And I'm like, I must've put this in wrong. Like, what did I do wrong? Like, what mistake did I make? Nope. I put it in perfectly correct. The 2 days later, might've been the next day, played nine more holes, shoot seven over, post that differential of like 20 point something, like almost 21. And I'm like, this is insane. The last 2 days I played 18 holes in 12 over par, which would be basically a 12 differential at this course. And I'm getting basically differentials of 20. My friend Bill Myers, who you know very well, Joe.
Billy, yeah.
10 handicap. He played with us one day. Shot two over par on the front nine, 39. Text me the next day because I was bitching and moaning about this exact same thing. And he said, I got a differential of 11.9 for a two over par round. Like, I get it. The USGA is like, all right, Nikki, you're not backing up this five over with another five over. Like, you're probably going to shoot 50 on the back. But this is ridiculous. So I looked into this. This is a very long Nick rules. I'm not going to apologize.
I love it. No,
very
this is great.
Near and dear to my heart. So now I'm going to read kind of what the USGA, I thought was a loophole. And it is a loophole for golfers who want a higher index than what they're capable of, because this is by the book. Quote, beginning in 2024, when a nine-hole score is posted, the World Handicap System will automatically calculate an 18-hole score differential for the round based on the player's nine-hole score differential and expected score differential based on their current handicap index, allowing the nine-hole round to be considered in the player's handicap index calculation right away. So basically what they're saying is you get the nine holes you played. We're going to give you an expected differential, which isn't very well defined, but I'll define that here in a second. For the other nine, give you an 18-hole score. Now this is the perplexing part. An expected score is the score a player is expected to achieve over a specified number of holes on a course of standard difficulty. It is based on the average score differential of players with a given handicap index or a normal distribution of scores. So basically, I think they're saying like, okay, you're a 22 handicap, Nick. Yeah, you had a nice front nine, but we still expect you to shoot 50 on the back. It's not based on like the strokes you would get, like if you're playing against somebody. It's just based on like, hey man, you're not a very good player. We're gonna give you not a very good score. Just one more thing. Yeah, okay. By using expected score to convert a nine-hole score into an 18-hole score differential, good nine-hole rounds relative to the player's ability will result in good 18-hole score differentials. Average nine-hole rounds will result in average 18-hole score differentials, and so on. This is the biggest part that I think the USGA is failing to execute. Now, I'd love to know if they think that the system is working the way they wanted it to work, or if maybe they're seeing things and being like, yeah, maybe we need to adjust. This isn't quite right. Because by two metrics, my good nine of five over, Bill's good nine of two over, really getting penalized, and in Bill's case, like actually raising his handicap. I don't see the good score being countered with a good differential. Now, again, this is a long, very long-winded Nick Rules / Mad Golf over the week. But Joe, I think you've posted some nine-hole scores. Have you noticed anything like this?
So I haven't played I haven't scored well this year, so it's not like I feel like I've been robbed. Yeah, I've had a couple 9-hole scores where the differential was higher than I thought it was going to be, but I didn't think it was too far out of whack, because what you're suggesting should happen is that the 9-hole differential should count somewhat over the course of 18 holes. And what they're saying is your 9-hole score is going to count with an average 9 holes from Nick. So it's going to be Nick today and Nick what he usually does, and that is an 18-hole score. I mean, I know that there's more to it than that, but right. That seems like sort of the general premise around it. Whereas before, it would be whatever 9-hole round you shot with whatever the next 9-hole round was that you shot. So there is a lot of unknown in this, which I think is what your beef is ultimately. Like, tell me exactly what is happening and why my handicap isn't what I think it should be, right. And I'll accept it. I still think it's dumb, but... And when I spoke to Gretchen about this, she said that we're going to put it into the computer. And she really wasn't able to give an explanation as to, like... And this isn't, like, a dig at Gretchen. It's just, like, this is the system that is in place, and she is subject to it as well. She runs the handicapping for one of the 50 states in America. And so, like... This is what she is subject to as well. And she said that they reevaluate these things, you know, from time to time. And if this is a system where, and it's been in place for almost 4 months now, you know, think of like Arizona or Florida, right? They've been doing this since January 1st. So you would think that if we get towards the end of the year and let's say we continue to play 9-hole rounds and it doesn't really work out how you would expect it to, perhaps this is something that they will change. Because Gretchen, one thing she did say, members at clubs are not quiet about this kind of stuff. And if we're talking about it on a podcast at public golf courses, think about what's happening where there are rooms with a lot of money behind these conversations, right? A lot of influence. People at, you know, Waverly or Columbia Edgewater, Oregon Golf Club, very big and institutional places that we have here in Oregon, are sending these sorts of email to Gretchen. Say the president of the club has gone up from a 5 to a 7, and he's hopping mad about that. He has a lot of influence. I think those are the types of people that are going to get change. So if you're seeing it, if Billy's seeing it, if I'm seeing it, they're seeing it.
The thing is, too, like, yeah, I want to have a lower handicap, right?
Don't but we like all.
Exactly. But not everybody does. That's the thing. And yeah, I'm pissed off because my good, you know, 2 hours of golf, it feels like it was just like a mediocre 2 hours of golf. But what about the person who plays me? Like, that person should be pissed off, because if I go to play in league and I'm a 20 handicap and I'm shooting 42, they're going to be like, what the hell is going on? Like, then we're going to be called sandbaggers. Like, those people are probably going to be more upset than me. Like, I just want to have a good, like a lower index because I'm embarrassed of what's going on. But like, people who are actually playing competitions, don't forget the point of a handicap is to level the playing field. And I don't really see this as leveling the playing field. And there's a lot of people who, like, for me, a 9-hole round makes a lot more sense than 2 18-hole, or 2 9-hole rounds make more sense than 2 18-hole rounds or 18-hole round. But if I'm just playing 9 after 9 after 9 and my index is, like, you know, very slowly creeping down, it's not really a true representation. I think the USGA ultimately wants to get the best representation of your ability. And it's not really factoring it in properly. Like, it's not really equating. And the other thing is, people want to know how their handicap is going to be calculated. Like, I want to, like,
yeah,
you can do the formula for an 18-hole round with your differential, all of that. It's very easy to figure out. But this is just saying, like, if you shoot a good 9, we'll match it with another good 9. And it's like, well, really? Like, publish some sort of table that says, if I am this index and I shoot that, then this is what you're going to assign me, so I can know, because it seems very in the dark right now.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see someone like Romy and how this would affect his handicap, right? Because he would probably have the inverse, where if Romy shot, let's say, and Romy's below a 1. So let's say Romy shot 40. Well, his back 9 is going to regress, but it's going to do it in a positive direction, right? So he's probably expected to shoot like 36 on the back. So he would have a 76 score for the differential. So if your handicap is low and you balloon a little bit, it's probably going to work in your favor. But to your point, I think more of us fall in the latter camp where, you know, I'm trying to stay in the single digits. You're trying to get below a 20. Billy's probably trying to get in the single digits or a little bit below that. So for golfers like us, it's like, you know, if I go out to U of I and I shoot one under on the front and then my differential is 7, I'm going to be pretty pissed about that. And it sounds like that's probably what would happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what I'm seeing. I mean, I'm doing the math. 5 over on the front nine. Basically, I'm getting a stroke. Like, my course handicap is basically what my real handicap is. You're giving me a differential of 19.5. So basically assigning me a score of 49 on the back. It's not, I think it should just be either a little more, weigh a little more your performance that day, or just publish how you're going to balance it out. Because right now it's just everyone's in the dark.
I think that's exactly right. And that is Nick Rules. That was a good one. Before we go, and I'm glad I remembered, I didn't want to forget this. Breaking news. You are caddying. Did he accept? Is this embargoed information, or can we share?
No, it's all good. Yeah, we can talk. He actually asked me a couple days. He mentioned that Marna couldn't go and asked if I could do it. And I said, yeah. So I'm going to caddy for Romy in his US Open qualifier. I think it'll be fun. I think I'm just going to, I mean, I'm not going to like give him any sort of golf advice, but hopefully keep the mood good and, you know, carry his bag and just kind of soak in what the atmosphere is like, what good players are doing. Cause yeah, I'll be in a group with Romy, but also a couple other presumably good players.
I think so.
We can hope. So yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be at Palouse Ridge. Of course, I've somewhat familiar with that nice course over at Wazoo that doesn't give the youth on course mixed up for you on course.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. It actually should time out good. I'm going to ask Romy. I'd love to have him on for talking to him about it beforehand and then do like a debrief with you guys afterward. And I think it's the same weekend as the PGA Championship. So I think that'll be fun. Have Romy on, make a few PGA Championship picks, talk about the US Open qualifier, and then kind of do a post game after he does it just to see how it went, how the caddy went. I'd just love to talk to you guys about his experience after it happens.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to the show. I hope I'm annoyed has a better experience next time they play golf in a resort location. And hey, get out there, be a single, go single.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at The Turn.